Hello and welcome to our first episode of the Work Healthy podcast for 2024. I'm John Ryan, and today we're moving continents to India, a country in 2022 that became the world's most populated with 1.43 billion people. Therefore, I think it's about time to see how workplaces work in India. Today, we have the pleasure of getting insight into Unilever, one of the world's largest consumer goods companies, employing over 127,000 people in over 190 countries with a turnover of over 60 billion in 2022. Today, we're learning about implementing a mental health strategy, specifically looking at the pledges laid out by the Global Business Collaboration for Better Workplace Mental Health. I'm joined by Sunita Wazir, Head of Transformation, Global Health and Wellbeing in Unilever, based in Mumbai. We discussed many issues, including the need to reduce stigma, the effect of the pandemic, the importance of the last mile manager, and how to create a program that's rolled out across many countries and cultures. If you want good advice, you come to the right place. I started our interview by asking why Unilever became one of the founding members of the Global Business Collaboration for Better Workplace Mental Health.
Thanks, John. Good question to start with. So why did we become members? Yes, we are among the first group of people that came together and became the founding partners for the Global Business Collaboration. And what drove us at that time, and this was way back in 2019, actually before the mental health impact of the pandemic and everything, was we felt there was a need for companies to take more ownership of mental health at the workplace. And we found that while there were a lot of external bodies and organizations, advisors, groups that we were working with, we believed that ultimately workplace mental health belongs within the companies and we need to be far more responsible. And we wanted to be able to reach every individual, particularly in those hard to reach places around the world where mental health care wasn't available, where you did not have awareness, where stigma is higher, where even with access, people do not reach out for help. And we believe that coming together as organizations, we can do a lot more. Individual organizations, yes, we do a lot of work. We offer support, resources. We offer solutions. We offer employee assistance programs. But the more we increase the knowledge, the more we increase the campaigning and advocacy for mental health, the likelihood that we will reach beyond our own workforces. And this was a bit of, you know, make the world a better place kind of work that we wanted to start. So the ambition was big. And the hope was to reach workplaces, whether it was small, medium or large organizations, and ensure this conversation around mental health starts there. We're all doing it. The problem is magnified. It has increased the size of the problem, the depth of the problem, the people impacted. The pandemic did that, right? The last few years, if they've taught us anything, they've taught us that people's mental health is affected by a number of factors. Yes, they are affected by the workplace, and there could be several other variable factors, right? There could be personal life, it could be loneliness, social connection, financial freedom, independence. There could be so many other reasons that impact an individual's mental health. So while corporations and companies can't always take all the responsibility, it's a shared responsibility we have. We have the responsibility because when people come to our workplace, they're with us for a number of hours, they give of themselves. You can't separate work from life. We've learned that in these last few years. And therefore, the responsibility continues. Now, how we handle it may be different. It may be good. It may not be great. It may be optimal. Ultimately, the individual is going to need support somewhere or the other. The more we make our workplaces conducive, the better the performance and the output that the individual will give us. And I think that's an inevitability. So for me, the important thing is that organizations accept and realize that there is a role we play. It may not be the only role, but it is a pretty starring role.
Okay. And for those organizations then who are ready to go on this journey to sort of say, okay, mental health is important. Let's make our organization better in this regard. Okay. And I was interested in the, the Global Business Collaboration there has six pledges. So maybe as a kind of just a way of going about this, if it's okay, we might kind of just explore those and talk about them in light of Unilever. Because one of the things I do really like is the fact that you talk about this high support, but equally high challenge. And for many, you know, that's a really interesting kind of combination. And how do you get that right? I'd love that. But the first one anyway, of these pledges is to develop and deliver an action plan to support good mental health in your organization. So what does that look like in reality?
You know, having a mental health supporting culture, you know, it comes with a number of different areas that you have to work on. So we actually have had a clear framework that we followed, right? So we've got the work that we do around culture. And now, you know, often you'll find organizations talking about culture, but how does a culture get built? It's about the conversations you're enabling, the stories that we're telling, campaigns around, for example, World Mental Health Day and other such occasions where we remind people that it's okay to, you know, to have mental health challenges. Primarily, and why particularly mental health? Because mental health is spoken about in softer and more shrouded tones than is physical health, right? Physical health, we're very open to talk about, okay, I sprained my ankle, I hurt my back, I had this tennis match and this happened, I fell down, I tripped. We're very comfortable talking about our physical health. But mental health, on the other hand, is talked about in softer, more quieter tones. There's a need for privacy because that stigma is real. So our work around culture has been focused on stigma and addressing that in whatever way we can. Another area that, you know, we've really ensured we work on is to work with our leaders. Now, we've had leaders that are really open to identifying better ways to support their people. But when you're talking about a high support, high challenge environment, we need to offer leaders the opportunity to learn new skills. The challenges that have been coming towards leaders in the last few years have been unprecedented. And being able to manage people, to manage their emotions. A lot of times we hear about the generational gap. Some people will say, I don't understand my Gen Z or my younger team members or colleagues. I don't understand what they're talking about mental health. And these are all labels or these are all constructs that we've created to say that, you know, everyone experiences it differently. Yes, everyone experiences mental and physical health very differently. But the reality is we need to offer support, training, education, awareness. No one comes to work to be mean or nasty to someone else, right? There's the pressure, there's the performance, there's the expectations that people have, whether they have the capability or not. That's what determines how they have interpersonal relationships at the workplace. And oftentimes, helping people become more aware, helping leaders become more aware of how they can help others better, that's crucial as well. Mm. Other things that we do, of course, is offer, you know, preventative and supportive solutions. So employee assistance programs, private access to counseling, mental health champions, which is our community of support. There are very many different ways in which you can keep the conversation going. What's essential is that you have that space and you have that opportunity to get people to get what they need. So our plan has, you know, always been focused on self-help tools, robust communications and campaigns, and we've leveraged the power of the community. That's been really, really quite a game changer for us.
Yeah, so talk to me about that, because you mentioned that the power of the community and providing the organization with a new vocabulary to talk about mental health. How does that work?
Well, the power of community is simply put, you know, it's about enabling earlier and earlier conversations. We know that for people who have accelerated mental health issues or who have, you know, start to feel strain, the earlier they speak about what's going on with them, the earlier they seek support, the earlier they get help, chances are that you can help them from progressing into a worse situation or, you know, mental ill health even. And very often, people don't seek support. They don't seek support, they don't reach out for support, they don't seek treatment, they don't seek solutions, they don't seek experts because they're afraid or they don't have enough awareness or they're not able to recognize the signs or symptoms in themselves. So about 3.5 years ago, we started to reach out to our community within Unilever because we found that amongst us, there are individuals that naturally we all turn to. You think back in your circle of friends, you know, there must be someone there who you feel really comfortable talking to. That person wasn't necessarily trained or anything. Maybe they're just a nice human being. You feel safe. They offer you a safe space. And like that, we knew that within our Unilever population, we would have a number of individuals that might perhaps want to offer support. So we went ahead and designed a mental health champion, almost an ambassador program. And we invited applications. And interestingly, in the first year, we trained 70 people who then went on to become trained as trainers, and they helped build our community. And within about a year and a half, we were up to 4,500 people trained already, people volunteering besides their day jobs to come in and be trained to have a conversation with their peers. So what do mental health champions offer? They offer a non-judgmental listening ear. They signpost to support and resources so that the individual knows exactly what help to get, where they can get it, what are some of the benefits we offer, what are some of the opportunities we offer. And it's a conversation where you're not being judged and therefore leave space with someone who's from within the business, which is, you know, just absolutely a great one. So it could be as much as just having a good conversation to having some tools or specific resources that, you know, you might need that might be recommended to you, to actually pointing you to here is a list of counselors, here is a suicide helpline, here is, you know, mental health helpline, here are some communities you can join. So the extent to which a mental health champion can support the individual is very much decided between the two of them. And it's designed to equip these champions to have these conversations. So we made sure it was a pretty robust training along the lines of, you know, globally established programs. And we made sure we had very, very simple tools available to them and the support and resources to follow. Because once you help someone identify what's going on with them, then they've got to reach out for help, right? It doesn't end there. That's, in fact, the start of the process, right? Then you start seeking the help, you get the support, you meet the professionals, you have counseling, and you go on and get the support that you need. So this is almost like a starting point. So the community was a great one to start with. The vocabulary around mental health champions or the vocabulary around mental health, that automatically developed because, I mean, that many people were trained, right? There was a buzz in the business. Everyone got to know that here they're learning new skills. They're understanding how to recognize signs and symptoms of themselves, in others. And we started to see people opening up a lot more. So more stories, more sharing, more openness, and more vulnerability. Because ultimately, even leaders need to learn how to be more vulnerable and open. That's how you can get others to be more vulnerable and open.
I was going to say, because so having that plan in place and then moving on to the culture piece, the leaders of the organization are absolutely critical with regard to making that a reality. So what did you do? Because I know from when we're dealing with organizations, trying to let the leaders understand their role as a role model for the organization is critically important. And some of them just don't see that for quite a while. And then when they finally do, that's a big moment. So how did you work with your leaders to get them to change their minds in terms of their role?
Well, we didn't have to work really hard, John. There was a lot of openness, and the pandemic offered, you know, literally was a gift for mental health in a sense that we found a lot more opportunities. People were very vulnerable. Leaders were really keen to help their teams. There was more opportunity for deeper and more socially connected conversations because we had to put in the effort, right? We had to put in those one-on-ones. We had to put on our cameras. We had to make those conversations happen to keep that connect and that, you know, ongoing relationship going. And as a result, we actually didn't have to fight this too hard. We had a lot of very willing and eager leaders come in. In fact, many of them got trained as mental health champions themselves because they wanted to build their own capacity and capability in having better conversations with people. Look, ultimately, these conversations happen at so many stages of an employment or so many stages of a career, right? It's not only during a mental health crisis. There could be someone who's dealing with bereavement, someone who's dealing with a change in their family, someone who's dealing with too many shifts in job, a new role, having to adapt to new technologies. And what we've found is a lot of the time, if we make assumptions, there's, you know, the curse of assumed knowledge that we think that everyone knows and understands everything that we do. Sometimes people don't realize the impact that they're having when they comment on someone's performance by talking to them about their behavior. You know, that's not usually something we are fully aware of. So as leaders, building that awareness that everything we say to individuals has an impact. And that impact is something we want to ensure helps them grow and learn and come out of the situation rather than diminish their self-confidence or reduce their ability to bounce out of it. So very often We'll use, you know, cases, we'll use stories, we'll use role modeling to show leaders what a good conversation is like. Ultimately, as someone who runs these programs, as someone who designs these programs, I realized the way for me to connect to them is to just be vulnerable myself, speak very openly about my own experiences. And in that shared experience, sharing your own experiences, sharing others, hearing stories from others, that's when we realize we're all going through different challenges, maybe at different times, but they're very similar in the sense that these interpersonal risks and challenges happen to all of us.
And Unilever obviously is a global, you know, organization. So culturally, how have you managed to, because I can imagine this in certain parts of the world being easier than others, and trying to remove a stigma and make people suddenly feel that it's okay to actually have these conversations. How did you manage to do that?
Absolutely. And that's a very important fact. John, we have operations around the world. We've got people in different parts of the world, particularly in somewhere you don't have so much clinical expertise. You don't have so many psychologists or psychiatrists per person available, right? And it's really, really important for us to understand this geographic and demographic diversity and shift and change that we have culturally. You know, mental health is experienced in different ways. We've always tried to keep our programs, you know, very much something that can be adapted. We design globally, but we enable locally. So we use the power of our community. We've got fabulous colleagues who work within the health and well-being space across the world who make sure that they translate, not just in terms of language, but also make the programs more relatable, the trainings more relatable. So we do spend a lot of effort and time and investment and resources in ensuring that everything we offer, whether it is a tool for line managers to measure their teams in energy effectively, that rolled out in 14 languages, in 14 global languages, whether we have training material or programs that we offer, we design so that they can be adapted, they can be customized, but also they can be translated. And that way, we're sort of having a centralized strategy, but then a very, very localized approach of deployment.
Okay, great. So one is the plan. Two is that open culture, trying to remove the stigma. Just mood boards was something I saw there. So I'd love you maybe to talk about that. But number three is obviously taking a very proactive approach to developing the culture and ways of working towards positive mental health. And I think this is a shift. Rather than responding to problems, you're actually actively and proactively sort of saying, this is where we need to build this culture. And I know psychological safety is a critical aspect of that. And obviously, just before Christmas, we would have had Amy Edmondson feature on the Work Healthy podcast, which was fantastic. You've had her yourself in your organization, and you've done work in this space. So what advice would you give to organizations who are interested in actually creating a more psychologically safe workplace?
So our own learning, you know, and of course, we absolutely love Professor Amy Edmondson's work, and, you know, we really appreciate the fact that we've had the opportunity to have her come speak to us. We've had a lot of people that from her extended network have helped us as well, you know, with various programs that we've run. The one thing that we've realized is psychological safety is not an end in itself. It's not the reason why you're, you know, operating. Business is the reason why we're in business, right? Delivering profitable, useful, impactful, productive business results and outcomes is what's important to us. Psychological safety is almost that currency, or it's almost that enabler, or that oiling that, you know, helps run this machine smoothly. If we don't offer psychological safety, then people are gripped with fear and they're not confident about speaking up. They hold back. They don't have ideas. They're not innovative. They don't have challenging, dissenting conversations. And as a result, you keep doing things the way you do them. So in every way possible, one of the things we've understood is that there is a very strong linkage between high performance and high psychological safety. And when there is low psychological safety, performance is not going to reach its highest because people don't feel open enough to speak up. They don't have the voice. They don't have the space to share what ideas they may have. We've been working, you know, across different markets and different teams, across different parts of the business, across different business groups. We've been talking to leaders and teams alike about psychological safety. And The one thing that, you know, always strikes us is that where there is psychological safety, there is more ideation, innovation, better performance, better productivity. The linkage is clear and we keep working towards it. Because what are those moments of truth where, you know, where that safety breaks? What are those gaps that come up? What are those leadership styles? Or what are those reasons because of which people feel less safe? We've started to work a lot in building self-awareness. I mentioned this tool that we have. Line managers can initiate their own assessment of their team's psychological safety through an internally built tool that we've had these partners build for us. And get a real report rather than just anecdotal evidence. We've got now evidence-based, right, where people are being asked to share through self-reporting how they are feeling. And with that, the leader can work better with the teams, with the individuals to build stronger and safer workplaces. It's in fact the one enabler that we believe will be the difference between sort of, you know, good enough to fantastic and outclassed performance. And so we've really been investing in building our approach to psychological safety, in building the conversations, in enabling those, and offering a lot of self-help tools that help our people get this knowledge for themselves.
That's a nice link into the fourth one, which is empower your people to manage and prioritize their own mental health and support one another. So this is a big shift that it's not about the organization sorting this all out and providing all of the support. There's a self-help aspect to this if you get this strategy of mental health right.
Yeah, absolutely. Because we have to recognize that we're affected as well, right? I mean, the pressures, the outside world, internally, there's always pressure. Pressure is a reality as we work. Our work days have stretched and expanded. Our approach to work, you know, and the opportunities have expanded as much as well. And so therefore, creating self-help tools that individuals, teams, large parts of the business can use together, but also then longitudinally letting them see the comparison, right? How are they doing over time? Let's say a team measures their energy at this point. Let's say we did it in Jan 2024, but then we also do a measure, let's say in July 2024 and then December 2024. Do we see how we are progressing as a team? So, you know, the older concept of having a once a year annual employee engagement survey, we can't stay with that anymore. We need to offer different ways for people to speak up and to share. And then we evolve and we rework and we remodel. And then we come back, reassess. If we're doing good, great. Keep doing the things we're doing right. And then let's look at the ones that we need to keep adjusting. So that continuous process of staying connected and measuring, but then also course correcting is really important.
And just a term that I saw there was the last mile manager. This idea that the manager is a really important, critical point in this relationship you have with your work and your workplace.
Yeah, absolutely. And equipping, you know, the last mile managers, people that individuals, large numbers of individuals have connections with, having those relationships eased out, not having sort of, you know, confrontational or argumentative kind of approaches when people have to have open and honest conversations. So building a space where everyone feels they have a voice, their voice is valued, they will be heard. It doesn't mean that you will all, every idea of yours will be accepted. Psychological safety does not mean that you'll be applauded for every idea and that every idea will be, you know, rewarded. But it means that you feel comfortable and safe enough to speak up. So how do you bring managers? How do we develop that skill? Because really, we don't just learn this automatically. It's something we have to acquire. We have to learn through a process of building self-awareness and then learning to have the tools and then, you know, building that muscle as leaders.
And it's not only catching people when they get it wrong, but I see you reward behavioral competency. So when people get it right, you highlight that. So how do you reward that? How do you recognize it?
Look, we're obviously on a journey, John. It's not sort of, you know, as linear and as simple as, you know, X and zero. It's going to be a complicated process, but we have a very clear standards of leadership, you know, sort of performance and the behaviors that we want to encourage, and we ensure that we recognize the what of what people do, but also how of the behaviors, how they deliver the results that they do. And that becomes a key part of assessment of performance and how we evaluate good and differentiate between good and great performance.
Number five, I just see, is about signposting. So this is this kind of idea that, okay, we don't have to solve all the problems. And as a manager, for example, in an organization, if you're opening yourself up to people coming in, talking to you about their problems, you don't have to have all the answers. You just have this role to signpost them to the right support. So maybe you talk a little bit about that. And because I'm interested that in a lot of what I'm reading here is that this isn't just them, but it's also their families that actually you're playing a role there in supporting them too. So how important is that?
I want to take a minute to talk a little bit more about signposting, because this is such a big unlock, right? We know that the dark side of mental ill health, there's, you know, suicide attempts, there is suicidal ideation, there's just so much out there that we often find that if we make self-help and direct access and, you know, unquestioning 24/7 access to support and help available to people, we're giving them the option to reach out for support. But signposting is not an easy thing to do. It's relentless. You have to keep on and on. You have to keep repeating the message. You have to be consistent. It has to be almost like if you learn in math, right? Concentric circles. You keep on and on with the same topic and you keep repeating it and you remind people and you want to build their trust that this is absolutely confidential. It's anonymous because not everyone wants their employer to know about their vulnerabilities, about their mental health issues, right? So signposting is one thing, but also what are those cues that you're offering people to see that this is available to you with no questions asked, there is no cost to you, it's absolutely confidential, the company does not get to hear any of the information back, and we keep repeating that message again and again and again, particularly where there is stigma, particularly where talking about mental health is taboo in some cultures, where some topics are not spoken about. So signposting, in fact, is such a critical enabler, because one is, yes, there is a leader that says, okay, well, you're having this issue, you're grieving, why don't you speak to an expert, here's the helpline, why don't you get in touch. But as a leader myself, sometimes I need direction. How do I help an employee who's facing a bereavement? How do I help an employee that has repeat issues? How do I deal with someone that is facing a loss that they haven't had before, or they don't have the capability and yet they're feeling overwhelmed? Line managers can reach out to employee assistance program, for example, to learn how to deal with their colleagues. So the fact that we have these support, you know, the providers, but then we also have internal support through community, and we've got the ability to train people. And then it's almost like in this dark tunnel, there's a light at the end of the tunnel where you're showing people, look, that's where you go. Because a lot of times people give up hope, they lose hope. And then that hopelessness is where they start to become dejected by their work. They have, you know, unfortunately, sometimes suicidal ideation. They might consider exiting the workforce. There are so many drastic outcomes people have when they don't have hope, when they don't see their ability to help themselves. And therefore, signposting is so critical. And it's so much an important part of building a strong mentally healthy workforce.
Sure, sure. And it's interesting. I noticed in the document reading about sort of, you know, these conscious pauses that people can actually take, but also just a concern that you can't kind of outsource the solution to a digital technology provider that, you know, at the end of the day, the personal markers piece, the personal human touch, and those conversations are the critical area, aren't they?
Technology is great, right? It helps you really get support and help and learn more in education, and it's fantastic. But, you know, we do realize that a tech meets touch approach is the most important one, because ultimately people are feeling isolated and the human connection is what matters so much. And so having a technology driven but yet a human approach is really, really important. And I know you talked about AI earlier on, and there are so many ways in which we can do, we can build awareness in education. But sometimes there is a need to have that human voice, that belief, that, that emotional connect that can be so empowering and powerful. And that can help individuals. So yeah, and going back to your earlier question, right, about families as well. Yeah, we do offer employee assistance to a lot of, you know, the employees, but also their families and the larger network. The reality is that as individuals in today's world, I mean, I'm a parent, I'm also, you know, a wife, I'm also a daughter, I'm playing so many roles. And I encounter, you know, whether it is in my social circles, in my friends, in my, you know, in my running groups, for example, I'm part of, you know, several running groups, I encounter people that are experiencing challenges or fears, and they really feel like they're alone. So the reality is that the more I equip myself in understanding signs and symptoms and signposting them to the help that's available to them, the better we can all ensure that, you know, that we are addressing mental health and we are making it more open and it's more accessible. And we're bringing it somewhere on par with physical health. You know, that's that's missing. We don't have parity in the way we talk about emotional, mental and physical health. It seems like they're all separated by what's allowed and what's not allowed, or what's acceptable and what's not acceptable. So why shouldn't we be okay to express what's going on with us in every form or every sphere?
I for me, the educational system has kind of slightly let people down in terms of not equipping them with the skills. And it's like as if, oh, sure, it's natural to know how to think, but it's not. It's one of the most important things you'll ever do is think and make choices based on your thoughts. And actually trying to manage your own mind and your emotions is like critical to success and the ability to train up on that. I mean, I'm constantly learning every single day new ways. And because of these podcasts, I think it's really important for me to know the latest, greatest techniques so I can pass them on to people, too, because it's so good when you can suddenly somebody comes to you and says, you know, that thing you said that worked.
And yeah, that's brilliant. And it's amazing, right? We have, you know, these limiting beliefs. What goes on in our minds can sometimes hold us back. That can be like this. I often think of that picture of, you know, a baby elephant with a chain and, you know, attached to a tree trunk. And then the elephant grows up and they don't realize they can break the chain, right? They continue to stay in that. And that analogy reminds you of people that feel that they have to stay in that cycle of, you know, worry and anxiety because that's how their minds are wired. And there's nothing you can do about it. That's how, you know, the process is working within you. And how do you break that? Sometimes you meet someone that, you know, either helps you go in that direction. You read something, something ignites that spark and you reach forward and you break that chain and you go out and get the support that you need. And it's not easy. It's not easy. It's not a quick fix. It's not like you can snap your fingers and that's it. You're treated, right? You don't pop a pill and then become okay. But to have that awareness and to know you need to keep going back and get that support and keep going for that support, I think that's critical. And that's a big part of the healing process. And so, yeah, absolutely. We need to have that, you know, either the individual, maybe someone who's purpose-led, who's ignited the spark within themselves and within others, to go out and get the help that they need.
Mm. So the last of those six pledges that the ASK organizations to make is regularly measure the impact of the efforts, being open about our progress to influence and inspire change in our organization and beyond. So that idea of measurement, I mean, you already mentioned, you know, the yearly annual isn't enough, that it needs to be kind of monthly, maybe. I mean, that's what we'd be fans of monthly pulses and helping people respond fast and spotting trends. So how has that been for you as an organization?
Yeah, and it's interesting you're talking about monthly, and then we hear people saying, but I have survey fatigue, and you know, we have asking people too many questions, we keep asking them these questions, probing. The intent is, you know, always to keep asking simple questions, right? I ask you to come in and attend a workshop on psychological safety. You're a young manager, you've attended it. What's stopping me from asking you two or three simple questions, you know, just a net promoter score? Do you think this was a good program? Did you learn something from it? Did you find something useful here? So the easier and easier, and, you know, we use data and we use technology to have shorter, quicker feedback from people.
Yeah.
Is this helpful? Can this help you make the change? Do you feel confident about it? That's, there's a dual benefit from that. One is it's an affirmation that you have learned this new skill and perhaps you will think about it a little bit more. But the other one is you then start to practice it as well, because now you have responded to a survey and you're sort of going with that, right? So we need to find interesting and innovative ways to keep measuring. And we find different ways, right? We have, of course, we have our annual surveys. We have quarterly pulse. We have our health and well-being focused survey. And we also have this measurement tool that leaders own for themselves. So it works for them within their teams. But then, of course, we get aggregated reports at an organizational level. Whatever your form of measurement of your program effectiveness or program impact is, ultimately, you need to measure the shift in people's comfort. It's usually going to be self-reported, right? I feel confident I have the skills. I feel I have the support. I know where to reach out to for help. I know who to go to when I need to talk about my mental health. I believe, you know, my organization cares about me. So the idea is for people to feel, it all boils down ultimately back to, you know, that psychological safety that you have. Yeah. Do I feel safe enough to be myself? Can I speak up when I don't feel so good? Can I take the downtime when I feel unwell? Do I have, you know, room to voice dissent when I don't agree with someone in the team or someone in a senior role? How do I feel about my work every single day? One of the things we've, you know, worked on, I know you mentioned this earlier, is, you know, how do people find their connect to what they do? And purpose really, really drives people. And so when you are led by purpose and when you are clear, you know, that you have the tools, you are doing something about something that matters to you, that's when you will also find a louder voice that you have within yourself, right? So as an organization, it's important to measure and to offer various solutions, but then also provide people the ability to see for themselves that they're doing what they want to, it matters to them, and they're able to do it at the pace in the way that they want to. So it's sort of very symbiotic, right? Purpose drives impact. Impact rewards purpose.
Yeah. I think, you know, funnily enough, the survey fatigue piece comes from people who don't see action taken as a result of the feedback. I think that's the key thing. If you do a monthly pulse and it's a 60-second set of statements that you're asking people to respond to, if they feel that there's a response to that, suddenly they're well up for it and they love getting these. So I think that's important too. Well, one final piece, because I know we're just coming to the end of this, and thanks a million for your time, is the alignment to the business. I think, you know, this is really important because I think this is where you get the win for everybody, because it's really important for everybody in the organization to be part of something successful. And getting people to align to that business outcomes. How do you guys go about that?
Yeah, I think the one thing is, you know, we know that when there is a congruence between how you're doing business, so brands with, you know, purpose grow, companies with purpose last, and people with purpose thrive. That's part of how we talk about our focus, you know, our connection to our business. And ultimately, when there is a congruence in the way we're doing business and the way we are supporting our people, ultimately, it's our talent and our people that are a huge part of how we do business, right? They're the ones that carve and, you know, make sure the vision comes alive. And therefore, for us, it's really, really clear that that connection to business results, the way we do business, we treat people the way we want to treat, you know, want them to treat our organization, our brands, our communities. And when you have the ability to let people be who they are, when they can thrive and they can be the best version of themselves, their untapped human potential is, you know, being valued and cherished, we find that that individual's impact will reach out to their community, to the business at large, and to the world at large. So we end up making the world a better place. So when you're talking about sort of company approach to how we want to be seen, what is our values, how do we want to perform, how do we want to do well, how do we make products that are fantastic and our consumers enjoy, our people are a key enabler for that. And when our people feel like they have the best opportunity, they can be themselves, they're thriving, they will ensure that our business does well. And that connection is sort of irrefutable. We've seen it over the years. It's our people that deliver the business results that we do have, and therefore we need to keep finding ways to help them thrive.
Sunita, thank you so much for the conversation today and joining us from Mumbai. I mean, it's wonderful to see the work that Unilever are doing in this space, and they're definitely leading the way, and they're an inspiration to other organizations to take mental health seriously. and to actually hopefully sign that pledge and start on that journey to helping their people have positive mental health. Thank you so much for joining us today on Work Healthy.
Thank you, John. Absolutely a pleasure.
I really do hope you enjoyed listening to that interview as much as I did. Unilever really are leading the way with regard to mental health, so our congratulations to them. Join us next time for our next episode of the Work Healthy podcast.